were you so intent on getting it done by Thanksgiving? You were saying Trump was going to be back in office by August. Now Thanksgiving's your new deadline?
We're bringing the case to them before Thanksgiving so we can reinstate Donald Trump in time to eat some turkey and watch the Bears take on the Lions.
And while Bannon is busy spitballing bad conspiracy theories with the pillow dingus, he's also obstructing the congressional investigation of the January 6th insurrection by defying a subpoena from the committee. And now the committee is moving to pursue possible criminal charges to hold him accountable.
Breaking news in the investigation into the January 6th Capitol attack. The House Select Committee just announced that they will move to hold former Trump advisor Steve Bannon in criminal contempt for refusing to comply with his subpoena.
We have engaged with a wide variety of law enforcement offices, including the U.S. Marshals, in order to issue the subpoenas. And we will use everything, as you said, with all due respect. We will use all of the agencies and all of the tools at our disposal to issue the subpoenas and then enforce them.
If witnesses do not show up, we will hold them in criminal contempt. We will vote them in contempt in the House, and we will refer them for prosecution.
So they might arrest Steve Bannon again? Bannon already looks like he got pulled out of bed in the middle of the night by U.S. Marshals. I feel like if they kicked in his door, they'd take one look at him and say, oh, is someone here already? Bannon already got arrested once and pardoned by Trump, although from looking at him, you'd think he'd escape Shawshank style. If the feds are looking for Bannon, I can tell you where to find him. He looks like the dude illegally selling pet iguanas on the boardwalk at Venice Beach.
This one's named Ricky. He can sniff your salad dressing to see if there's vaccine hidden inside.
Bannon's defying the January 6th investigation, but his former employer, Trump, still wants an investigation into the 2020 election to somehow prove his repeatedly disproven conspiracy theories about the election. And now he's basically telling Republican voters, don't go to the polls unless GOP politicians get on board with his lies.
Former President Donald Trump is sending a clear message to Republicans. Don't vote. In a statement yesterday, the former president urged his supporters to focus on the last election instead, writing this: if we don't solve the presidential election fraud of 2020, which we have thoroughly and conclusively documented, Republicans will not be voting in 22 or 24. It is the single most important thing for Republicans to do.
Meanwhile, the angry orange baby is throwing another fit over the election he can't admit he lost. He wrote, if we don't solve the presidential election fraud of 2020, which we have thoroughly and conclusively documented, Republicans will not be voting in 22 or 24. Is the single most important thing? I know, I'm confused also. It's like, did Nancy Pelosi write this for him? It seems like he's telling Republicans not to vote. And, of course, this brings up the age-old question, which is, how do you solve a problem you made up? That's not the only nutty message Trump's sending around. This is a real email from his campaign. Fauci is a Grinch, in all caps. He is trying to cancel Christmas. And if you donate to his campaign, you get free How Fauci Stole Christmas stickers to let everyone know you will not be controlled and will not let Fauci steal Christmas. This man is a talker. He's like, what? Why am I? This is their new theme, though, is the Grinchy Democrats want to take your Christmas away.
Can this administration guarantee that holiday packages will arrive on time?
We are not the Postal Service or UPS or FedEx. We cannot guarantee.
No guarantees in life. The Grinch has nothing on these people. Biden and the Democrats are going to be stealing our children's future. Just like the Grinch in the middle of the night, slithering around those presents, taking everything in sight.
I have a feeling she didn't read all the way to the end of the book.
I do like that Trump is constantly making life difficult for Republicans who just want to use him to win power. Sorry you guys bought a ticket on this train wreck and now you can't get off. It's kind of like when your spouse makes you go horseback riding and you say sure, thinking it'll take 20 minutes and not realizing it's a 3-hour trail with no lunch breaks and the horse hates you and stops every 15 minutes to take a
dump.
This is the GOP, a party obsessed with unhinged conspiracy theories. For example, earlier this week, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham made this totally incomprehensible claim about migrants crossing the southern border.
We had 40,000 Brazilians come through the Yuma sector alone, headed for Connecticut, wearing designer clothes and Gucci bags. This is not economic migration anymore. People see an open America. They've taken advantage of us.
I'm asking this in all sincerity. What the are you talking about? Brazilians headed to Connecticut with designer clothes and Gucci bags? Are you confusing the southern border with an episode of The Real Housewives? That sounded like a random string of nonsense words. You sound like Siri after someone dropped their iPhone in the toilet. Siri, what are the lyrics to We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel?
Designer clothes without the tags, Brazilians wearing Gucci bags.
Thank you. The GOP saw the dangers of Trump and the whirlwind of lies and conspiracy theories around him and tried to use him to ride back into power. But now they're facing the consequences of that decision. Trump's acolytes are facing possible criminal charges for defying subpoenas. Next, he's going to claim they're hiding votes in
salad dressing.
Thanks this week for the songs from Husker Du and Robin Hitchcock. And thanks also for the clips and excerpts from Amber Ruffin, Jordan Klepper, Seth Meyers, Donald Trump, Mike Lindell, Steve Bannon, Jimmy Kimmel, Jen Psaki, Laura Ingraham, and Lindsey Graham.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
The film festival, Film Columbia 2021, begins today, October 22nd, running through to October 31st. Film Columbia is back for its 21st season with 40 films from around the world being shown at the Crandall Theater in Chatham, New York. from October 22nd to October 31st. I'm Andrea Cunliffe from Hudson Mohawk Magazine, talking with Lisa Thomas just before the showing of her film on this opening day of the film festival.
I'm with Lisa Thomas in front of the historic Crandall Theater in Chatham, New York.
Because this is the Columbia Film Festival, and congratulations, lady.
Thank you. This is our third festival in 3 weeks.
Wow, and what happened in the other festivals?
We were in San Francisco and at the Adirondack Film Festival showing this short that we did last year called Candy Store, which is a Dust Bowl Fairies music novella, and we took home the prize of the other two festivals for best music video.
And the name of the video?
Candy Store.
And tell me about why we're here in Chatham.
It's the opening day of Film Columbia, Columbia County's premier film festival that they have every fall.
And you have been a winner now?
They don't have awards at Film Columbia. They don't believe in it.
Oh.
So I was here a few years back, 5 years ago, with Thirsty, a musical that even Andrea knows a little something about a Cher impersonator named Thirsty Burlington.
So it's good to see you. You're excited. You're happy. This is a wonderful way to start the film festival. What have you got in the future?
Well, we got some submissions with Candy Store and some other films that we're making at Thin Edge Films, and we're doing all kinds of fairy-inspired events.
And here we are, and who's here but Ryder? Ryder, say hello.
Oh, hello.
Another hello.
That's the lead fairy of the Dust Bowl Fairies named Ryder Cooley.
And there you are on the screen.
Yeah, any minute now. It's about to start. We're still waiting for one fairy, the Rocket Fairy, John B. Wooden, to show up. So it's all, like, down to the wire here. They said they're going to do a few announcements before the film starts. So.
Yeah, there's a few fairies of the Dust Bowl Fairies. They might appear. They might just fly right in.
Wouldn't that be exciting? I'll be looking for them.
Just text you.
Okay, wait, all I've right. got 2 minutes, so we got...
All right, so I'm going to tell you...
I people that I can find.
I'm going to tell you a little bit about what's going on. So, you know, the Dust Bowl Fairies, I credit a lot to them, because prior to working with Ryder Cooley and her fairies, you know, I was largely a producer in indie film and largely in animation. But Ryder was the first person to kind of come to me and said, hey, you know, I have this concept. It was a video. The very first video I did with them is called Sirens. And she's like, I want you to direct it. And, you know, no one prior to that had ever asked me to direct. And now I've since done five different videos for them. Candy Store, which is here at Film Columbia today, is the latest in that series of projects. But, you know, she was the first person to actually have me direct. And now I've gone on to direct a few other things. So in many respects, I thank Ryder for giving me the first opportunity to do it.
Well, I think we're all looking forward to seeing the film. I've had a glimpse of it on the, you can get it off the web. It's wonderful to see you, Lisa. You look radiant, and it's a brilliant day today, and congratulations on being one of the great selections here at the film festival.
Yeah, I think Candy Store...
The little atmosphere.
I think Candy Store might be the only short in the festival because they program largely features, and I think there's less films this year because they've like pared it down due to COVID and stuff, but they're back, and that's the most important thing, is a lot of festivals, you know, skipped out a whole year due to COVID, and now festivals are coming back, which is really, really exciting. Like I mentioned at the top of this interview, we just came from the Adirondack Film Festival last weekend, and to be able to see other filmmakers and see them in person and see their work on the big screen again is really so heartening, you know.
The other quick thing, the last time that we spoke with you was about your film that you made during COVID. What, a year ago it was produced?
It's called Ghosts of Love, which was an animated thing I did right at the top of COVID, in large part to honor a lot of the people that had passed away right at the very beginning of the pandemic. I just was so sort of caught up in what was going on that, you know, I wanted to do something to honor some of those first lives that we lost. And obviously there have been a lot more people now. But yeah, Ghosts of Love, you can catch that on the interwebs as well.
Thanks so much. Thanks.
All right.
See you. Have a great time.
All right. Thanks.
Are we recording?
Yes, we are.
Great.
So my name is Calliope Nicholas. First name is Calliope, C-A-L-L-I-O-P-E. Last name is Nicholas, N-I-C-H-O-L-A-S.
And we're here at the festival, the Film Columbia. Thank you. I got that. We're at Film Columbia, and we're speaking with Calliope about the whole festival this year. Starts right now. Yeah. Tell me about it.
We're excited. I mean, after a year of being not able to screen and, you know, being able to see the loyal faces and people that have come to us over the years and to see some of the films that have been sold out, we're excited. We're happy to be back. We really are. Big relief.
And how did you select the films for this festival?
So we have two curators. We have Peter Biskin and we have Larry Kardish. Larry Kardish is actually was the curator at a film and media at MoMA. So between the two of them, you know, Larry travels to film festivals all over, and between the two of them, we were able to pick the best. And basically, the films that have won awards at other film festivals, that were audience favorites at those film festivals. So we do that just trying to keep our audience in mind.
That's brilliant. What have you got that's really something that caught your eye in this festival?
The international films that we have are amazing this year, and it turns out it's just now they're starting, each of these countries are starting to submit their Academy nomination. So we've got Hive, we've got Flea, which is an animated film about an Afghanistan refugee. Of course, everyone, French Dispatch is already sold out. Again, we have over 40 films from 32 different countries.
That's so amazing. Yeah. So how long is the festival going on for?
It's on starting today, and it's going on through the 31st.
Brilliant. And we can find out online or?
Yeah. Filmcolumbia.org. You can do online ticket sales. We do have, you know, mandates with COVID, mask and vaccine requirement, but otherwise, come. It's great.
You want to repeat that otherwise?
Sure.
Come.
Yeah.
Wait till that truck comes by.
Yeah.
I don't know why
live.
They have to be here. Go ahead.
They have to be. So, yes, so we've got, again, tickets on filmcolumbia.org. You can get tickets online. We do have mandates in place, mask inside as well as proof of vaccination. But come, our theater is a 535-seat theater, even with buffered seating. It's a beautiful space.
Oh, it is wonderful, wonderful. One more question. What was I going to ask you? Something was really pertinent. Now it's gone out of my head. Okay.
You know, one of the things with film festivals in general, and definitely with our film festival and how it's been curated, is there's films that are here, international films including, that may not end up being streamed, that you're able to see on the big screen, and that would probably not otherwise be screened or shown in the region. So that's one of the things that makes this unique as well.
Are there many local filmmakers that are appearing or having their programs here?
We have some, and we've had more in the past because we usually have two venues, but because of COVID, we have not. We only have the one venue. So we had more films than we had space for. So next year, we want to bring in more local films.
We'll look forward to that next year. Can anyone apply?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks
very much.
Thank you for speaking with us on Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Thanks very much.
Awesome, thank you.
Now to absorb some local color through the magic of AM radio.
The book of Revelations tells us to watch for the seven signs of evil.
Wait, sign of evil number 4.
Continuing our sign of evil countdown, here's Vanessa Williams.
Try to make it real. passion is the motivation. Hanging up the whole damn nation. Look like we always end up in a rut. Try to make it real, but compare to what?
You gotta try something.
I got a job at the radio station.
Oh, great, that place. It's dark and dirty and has, like, what, those three weirdos who work there?
Hi, folks. Before we begin taping today, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Peter Jenks of the Federal Communications Commission. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Barris. I don't know if any of you are aware of this, but it's a federal offense to make lascivious remarks on a television network broadcast. The penalty for this disgusting
hands, everybody, if you got what it takes, because I'm Curtis Blow, and I want you to know that these are the boys.
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, New York, hands-on radio for Columbia and Greene counties.
Hey, Donna.
What's on your mind, honey?
Do you know who really holds the master key to the Love Motel doors?
I sure do, honey. It's all the good people that keep this lovely radio station running.
That's right. They've made room on their airwaves for your broken hearts, our favorite love songs, and the entire community that makes this community feel like a community.
So, on this 10-year anniversary pledge drive, go ahead and type out WGXC.org/donate and drop some change into the WGXC love pot, and you can go ahead and tell them Donna and Honey sent you.
And then stop by the Love Motel every first Thursday at 8 p.m. right here on WGXC, Acre, Hudson, Catskill.
We love spending the night with you.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jen Crawford of Germantown, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Grabbable, handleable,
listener-fueled radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
An epidemic within the pandemic, police killings of African-American men. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. While the pandemic slows throughout the United States, at least among the vaccinated, another deadly epidemic persists unchecked, police killings of men of color. A Washington Post online database reports 7,216 people killed by police since 2015, with 914 killed so far this year. African Americans are 2 to 3 times more likely than whites to be killed by police. A movement is growing to hold these violent officers accountable. Progress is being made, as demonstrated by developments in the cases of Ahmaud Arbery, Roger Green, and Elijah McClain. Nothing will bring them back, but accountability may prevent future deaths at the hands of police. In his book, The Condemnation of Blackness, Khalil Gibran Muhammad writes, "There's an arc of history that connects lynching's past to policing's present," unquote. As devastatingly documented at the Legacy Museum and Memorial in Montgomery, Alabama, lynching was central to terrorizing the African-American population following emancipation from slavery. Ahmaud Arbery's violent death on February 23, 2020, caught on video by one of the accused perpetrators, had all the hallmarks of those lynchings from a century ago. On that sunny Sunday afternoon in the suburbs of Brunswick, Georgia, Gregory McMichael and his son Travis saw Arbery jogging, grabbed guns, and pursued him in a pickup truck. Their neighbor, William Roddy Bryan, joined the pursuit in his own truck, recording the video on a cell phone. The father-son team claimed they were attempting a citizen's arrest of Ahmaud Arbery, who rightly resisted. Travis McMichael fired 2 shots, killing Ahmaud. The elder McMichael was a former Glynn County police officer and investigator for the Brunswick Judicial Circuit prosecutor, Jackie Johnson. She was recently indicted for directing police not to arrest Travis McMichael and then steering the case to a sympathetic prosecutor. It was a third prosecutor, after the video evidence became public, who ultimately filed the murder charges against the McMichaels and Bryan. Jury selection is currently underway in their trial. In Louisiana, officers in a notoriously violent state police division known as Troop F engaged in a high-speed pursuit of 49-year-old African-American motorist Ronald Green on May 10, 2019. Police reported he died after crashing into a tree. They later said he struggled with them and that he died on the way to the hospital. More than 2 years later, the Associated Press published shocking police body camera footage of the encounter that painted a drastically different picture.
I'm so scared. I'm just scared. Get out of the hospital. I'm so scared.
I'm your brother. I'm scared. I'm scared. Green was pleading as police brutally beat, tased, and dragged him while shouting threats and expletives at him. Not long after, he was dead. In a remarkable development, an African-American Louisiana State Trooper, Carl Cavalier, went to the press last June, releasing notes from the officer who investigated the death. That officer had recommended at least one of the troopers involved be arrested and noted that senior state trooper commanders intervened to block any arrests. Carl Cavalier, the whistleblower, has been suspended and reportedly has been fired, although the state police say he's still employed. As Cavalier told a Baton Rouge TV reporter,
"We still have murderers in my eyes on the job."
Federal prosecutors are investigating the possible cover-up, reportedly going up the chain of command. Elijah McClain was violently arrested by police in Aurora, Colorado on August 24, 2019. He was walking home from a convenience store when police stopped him and quickly escalated the encounter. Police tackled him. As Elijah said, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe, please." He pleaded, "I'm an introvert, I'm different.
I don't even kill flies. I don't eat meat. I
me. I'm not a vegetarian.
I don't even kill flies. I don't eat meat. I'm a vegetarian. An emergency medical technician injected Elijah with a massive dose of the sedative ketamine, causing a heart attack. He never regained consciousness and died several days later. Elijah McClain was 23 years old. His case went unnoticed until the racial reckoning following the police killing of George Floyd in May 2020. Protests grew in Aurora, a Denver suburb. Colorado Governor Jared Polis empowered the state attorney general to investigate, and in September, three police officers and two EMTs were charged with manslaughter, homicide, and assault. This week, Aurora reached an undisclosed settlement with the McClain family. A tectonic shift is underway in public awareness of the pervasiveness of police violence, especially directed at young black men. There's also a growing willingness to prosecute police who kill. Yet, the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act died in the U.S. Senate, and just this week, the U.S. Supreme Court made it harder to hold police accountable with two opinions that strengthen the doctrine of qualified immunity. Despite the resistance of these powerful institutions, it will be an engaged citizenry, both documented and undocumented, that will end the epidemic of police killing. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes? Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu, up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
And now here's your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, partly sunny with a high near 56 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 38. And on Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 58 degrees. And on Sunday night, rain is likely mainly after 5 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 41 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
One speeding ticket, Columbia County.
Columbia County, everybody gets speeding tickets. How else do they pay for the roads to get plowed in the winter?
What else do DJs get? I mean, we're just voices in the air, but we're what makes radio live. And what do we get for it? Seems like every year you pack everything up, move to another town. Gets harder and harder to find a station that'll let you program music you want to play. Well, you're 40 and there's some kid half your age who will take your job and do it for half the money. And then you find yourself making silly demands. Free coffee. But that's my little moment of honesty, so we can get back to the nonsense.
You just heard The Tunnel from Aaron Dillaway and Lucretia Dalt's 2021 album Lucy and Aaron.
Thank you.
Thank you.